President Donald Trump announced that he is canceling President Obama's policy toward Cuba today, fulfilling a promise he made on the campaign trail. The policy was announced in Little Havana, Florida, and will change travel restrictions and reinstate the 56-year-old trade embargo. Here's a listen.
We will enforce the ban on tourism. We will enforce the embargo. We will take concrete steps to ensure that investments flow directly to the people so they can open private businesses and begin to build their country's great, great future, a country of great potential.
The move is expected to have foreign policy and economic impacts for the U.S., and even though President Obama's decision to open up relations with Cuba wasn't initially popular with Republicans, many of them have been working toward more open relations with the country. William Leo Grand joins us now. He's a professor of government at American University and a specialist in U.S. foreign policy in Latin America. William, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Well, now, compare what we're seeing from President Trump today to what happened, what was going on with the embargo before President Obama's changes.
Well, the changes that President Trump announced today do not take us all the way back to the time before December 17th, 2014, when President Obama and President Raul Castro announced that they wanted to normalize relations. What President Trump announced today hits at two very specific kinds of business between Cuba and the United States. It prohibits Americans from going to Cuba on people-to-people educational travel by themselves or on their own as individuals. You have to go with an organized group now. And that's a return to what policy was since the Clinton administration. The other thing that they've done is to prohibit any transactions with a Cuban business that's managed by a company that reports to the armed forces or is it part of the Ministry of the Armed Forces. That's important because about half the Cuban tourist industry is in enterprises that are managed by the armed forces. What will happen next is the State Department will put out a list of the companies that you can't do business with. And this is going to, I think, put a chill on travel to the island. Because if I'm, if I'm visiting Cuba and I stop in a corner store to buy a bottle of water, and that corner store happens to be part of an enterprise that's managed by the armed forces, I could be breaking the U.S. embargo inadvertently and be subject to fines.
We'll get into the impact on Cuba in just a bit. How much of a difference does this make, say, economically and foreign policy-wise for the United States?
Well, it's going to restrict U.S. businesses' ability to work with some Cuban enterprises. It's not entirely clear until we see the details of the regulations, just how extensive that will be. They are carving out some exceptions, important exceptions to these regulations, although the Cuban military does run the ports and the airports and telecommunications. Those three areas have been exempted from this, and of course, that's the area right now where most U.S. businesses are operating. It's the cruise ships going into ports, it's the airliners flying into airports, and it's several different U.S. telecom companies doing business to expand Internet access on the island.
The president talked a lot today about freedoms in Cuba and lack of same and human rights issues. Here's a listen.
We will not lift sanctions on the Cuban regime until all political prisoners are freed. Freedoms of assembly and expression are respected. All political parties are legalized. And free and internationally supervised elections are scheduled.
So, in effect, economic leverage here to promote human rights and political freedoms in Cuba. Is this something that could be an effective policy?
Absolutely not. I mean, this is a policy the United States has been following since 1960, of trying to use economic coercion to get the Cuban government to behave the way we want them to behave, and it has never worked. That's the principal reason that President Obama changed the policy back in 2014. The Cubans are very sensitive about their nationalism, their national sovereignty. They spent the better part of the first half of the 20th century as a kind of quasi-colony of the United States. And so when any foreign power, but especially the United States, starts telling them what to do and how to organize their affairs, they react very badly.
Talking to William Leo Grand from American University, looking at President Trump's announcement today changing the United States' Cuba policy. Let's talk a little more, though, about human rights in Cuba. President Trump, again, focused on that a lot. It is not necessarily a happy picture, is it?
No, the Cuban government does not tolerate dissidents. When dissidents go out to demonstrate or organize a meeting, the police typically arrest them and break up their demonstrations and break up their meetings. There is greater space for political debate in Cuba today, partly as a result of the expansion of the Internet. There's a very robust set of blogs which run the gamut from government supporters to open dissidents like Yoani Sanchez. There's an increasing number of digital journalists who are running really digital news services. So there's actually a lot going on besides just the traditional dissidents who demonstrate against the regime and get arrested. But I must say, I think the invocation of human rights as the reason for this policy change is really pretty cynical on the part of the administration. This is a president who went to Saudi Arabia and said he wasn't going to tell the Saudis how to run their lives. A president who applauded the president of the Philippines, who is engaging in a campaign of extrajudicial executions of suspected drug users. He approved the Turkish referendum tearing down democratic institutions, and he's never had a bad thing to say about President Putin in Russia. So this is not an administration that has ever put human rights at the forefront of American policy. So I think to do it now in the case of Cuba is really more an excuse than it is a reason.
If not human rights, what do you think is the reason for this change?
I think this is a policy dictated by domestic politics. You just have to look at the venue where the president made this speech, in Manuel Artime Theater, named after the leader of the Cuban exile Bay of Pigs invasion. He said as much in the speech himself when he thanked the Cuban-American conservatives for having voted for him and said that he had come to redeem his campaign promise to reverse Obama's policy.
William Leo Grand is with us. He's a professor at American University. He specializes in U.S. foreign policy towards Latin America. You can join the conversation now about President Trump's policy announcement on Cuba, tightening some things that have been opened up under the Obama administration. Call in at 800-642-1234. Do you think the U.S. should revive the longstanding embargo with Cuba? Do you think the Obama-era policy towards Cuba should stay? What about travel? Do you think the United States should restrict individual travel, person-to-person travel, as it's sometimes called? If you're a member of the business community, how do you see this affecting you? Are you from Cuba? Is your family? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. I'm picking up the conversation now with William Leo Grand, professor at American University, specialist in U.S. foreign policy in Latin America. We're talking about President Trump's announced changes in U.S.-Cuba policy, what it can mean, looking at the idea of maybe not completely going back to the days of the full-on embargo, but definitely moving in that direction. You can join in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Do you see these policy changes affecting you or your family personally? Do you think the new policy will help or hurt the U.S.? Do you think it's a good idea? Is it good leverage potentially on human rights in Cuba? Call in now at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll go right to our callers. Abraham joins us in Green Bay. Hi.
Hi. You know, I wanted to say that this change of policy doesn't really do anything besides, act as a, smoke and play of the media than anything else. this is the same president that is complicit in many ways in human rights abuses across the world, from Saudi Arabia to Indonesia and many other places, as was rightfully pointed out by your guest. It really isn't anything but just a play of the media and perhaps even a distraction away from what the president is experiencing, politically speaking, at the moment.
Abraham, thanks for the call. William, he agrees with you about human rights here. Did you see, William, benefits from President Obama's policy in terms of changes in Cuba?
Yes, I think so. I think the reason that we've seen a tremendous expansion of Internet access is precisely because that was one of the things that President Obama negotiated, or his team negotiated back in 2014. As part of the agreement of December 17th, the Cubans agreed to expand Internet access, and since that time, a number of U.S. companies have been able to go in there and sign contracts with the Cuban telecommunications firm to actually begin to put that into practice. So now you have Wi-Fi spots that are expanding across the island, and I think that's very beneficial. As I said, the most robust debate right now in Cuba is happening online.
And I've seen reports that in the U.S. Senate, we have something like 55 senators signed on to a plan to loosen relations with Cuba still further, reduce the embargo more, including Democrats and some Republicans. Is politics moving in a different direction than the president here?
I think Congress is moving in a different direction. The 55 senators co-sponsoring Senator Flake's bill, the Freedom to Travel bill, and what it would do is repeal all restrictions on travel to Cuba. And the basic principle there is that Americans have a constitutional right to travel, and the government shouldn't be telling us where we can and can't go unless there's really an overriding national security interest, which clearly doesn't exist in the Cuban case. Over in the House of Representatives, you've got a number of conservative Republican members of Congress who are working hard to expand trade with Cuba. Congressman Crawford, Congressman Emmer have both been working very hard and lobbying the White House to allow an expansion of agricultural sales and to begin to remove the embargo itself. So it's a bipartisan issue in Congress. To be sure, there are still members who are in favor of maintaining the embargo, and they tend to be the most conservative Republicans. But there are a lot of Republicans who are responding to their business constituencies who want to open up the Cuban market.
We're talking to William Leo Grand from American University about President Trump's announcement today on U.S. policy toward Cuba. Back to your calls now with David on the line in Milwaukee. David, hi.
Hello, how are you?
Good. What do you think?
So, yeah, I just had a question. Since Trump is such a capitalist, I don't understand why he wouldn't be in favor of trying to invest and make money on Cuba. And I'll take my answer up there.
David, thanks for the call. What do you think, William?
Well, you know, President Trump did try to invest in Cuba back in 1998 when it was strictly against the law because of the embargo. He sent a representative to Cuba to explore the possibility of opening a hotel there. And when they were questioned about it, they said, oh, they were on a humanitarian mission, which wasn't strictly true. But I think what's going on now is that President Trump, the politician, is making a political payoff to conservative Cuban Americans who supported him in the last election at a time when the vote in Florida looked like it was going to be very close.
Thanks for the call, David. William, there's this ongoing argument in both political theory and political practice. When you're looking at an oppressive regime, is it better to have trade and contacts and contact and that will loosen things up in that regime? Or is that trade reinforcing the regime, both through the money and maybe the prestige the company gets by having these contacts?
Well, I think you've got to look at on a case-by-case basis. In Cuba, we have a kind of natural experiment. We really did try every element of coercion against Cuba, from the Bay of Pigs invasion through the CIA's secret war against Cuba in the 1960s to very strict economic embargo, and then somewhat relaxed economic embargo. We tried getting the Latin America behind us, and for a while they subscribed to the embargo, and then they all got out of the embargo. We've tried a lot of different modalities of economic coercion to get Cuba to behave, and it has never worked. The only thing that's worked with Cuba over the years is sitting down with them, trying to find common interests, and negotiating with them based on mutual respect and respect for their sovereignty.
Now, President Trump has said President Obama made a bad deal. If he was going to do these things to loosen things up, he should have had specific commitments on human rights. Is there something to that?
Well, no. I think the president judged that the relaxation of particularly the regulations on the embargo were aimed at creating connections between Cuba and the United States, between not just the Cuban government and the U.S. government, but between U.S. business and Cuban business, between ordinary Americans and ordinary Cubans by loosening up travel regulations, in the belief that creating those connections would itself have a positive effect on change inside Cuba. That was the logic of what he did. To go to the Cuban government, for the U.S. government to go to the Cuban government and demand that they change their human rights practices or else has never worked. The Cuban government's response is always, that's a matter of our internal affairs. It's none of your business.
We'll leave it there for now. William, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure.
We've been talking to William Leo Grand. He's a professor of government at American University and a specialist in U.S. foreign policy towards Latin America. He joined us to talk about President Trump's announcement on changing U.S. policy toward Cuba.